It is good being here. Although I'm here with a friend, I call her Ms. Vertigo. I was in a tornado, actually, and we were supposed to have one here today, I'm told, in a place called Alabama. And as a consequence, I've been living with Vertigo for the last couple of years. So every now and then, if I don't show up with something, it's because I tell people, I have Vertigo, and they say, what is that? It's amazing how people look disdain on Vertigo. But it's wicked, because it will keep you from doing anything, any kind of work. All you want to do is stretch out and not move. But I said to Ms. Vertigo this morning that, you know, I don't know why you want to hang out with me, because Hitchcock did a movie about you. So you are famous, right? So I mean, why hang out with me? So what I do when I remember to tell her that she could stay upstairs with the computer in the computer room and in my library, right? And hang out in my bedroom where, you know, my children put a TV in there and watch the Idiot Box, you know, but don't come downstairs with me. But she came downstairs with me today, so it's been a little wicked. I'm told I should leave for 15, 20 minutes and we go into the conversation. And today is March 1st, and, you know, I don't know. One of the reasons why maybe I am feeling the way I feel is that my dad was a leap year baby. So he was born February 29th, so sometimes he celebrated the birthday on the 28th or March 1st. I did a book called Does Your House Have Lions, which was dedicated to my dad and my brother. And this book is about the two of them, the struggles they had with each other, and my brother's death from AIDS. Those of you who write, I say to you that the book is in Ron Royal, which really kicked me in the derriere for 3 years, you know? Anytime you change the rhyme, the whole bloody thing changed. And many a night I would throw the rhyming dictionary across the room and turn out the light. But then 10 minutes later, I'd get up and pick it up and hug it and apologize, you know, for such an action because I needed it. So I want to read about my brother who came north and then the interaction with my father how they consoled each other, how they lived together, and how when my brother died, one of the first of three young men at Lenox Hill Hospital in New York who died of AIDS in the 1980s. And so this is a sister's voice. And I want to say for those of you who write, you know how you start something, you think that you have it under control. And I was going to tell the story, and in the midst of telling the story, my brother said, well, where's my voice? And I said, well, okay, yeah, okay, I got it. There's a space for your voice. So then when I was telling my dad I was writing this book, he said, well, Sonia, you have to talk about me because you can't talk about my son, your brother, without me. And he says, I hope you get me right this time. Because the first poems, you know, that I did were wicked poems about my brother, about my father, and all the women that he loved. Sister's voice. This was a migration unlike the 1900s of black men and women coming north for jobs, freedom, life. This was a migration to begin to bend a father's heart again, to birth seduction from the past, to repay desertion at last. And then I described my brother. Imagine him short and black, thin mustache draping thin lips. Imagine him country and exact, thin body, underfed hips, watching in this corral of battleships and bastards, watching for forget and remember, dancing his pirouette. And he came, my brother, at 17, recruited by birthright and smell, grabbing the city by the root with clean metallic teeth, commandant and infidel, pirating his family in their cell, and we waited for the anger to retreat, and we watched him embrace the city and the street first. He auctioned off his legs, eyes, heart in rooms of specific pain. He specialized in generalized, learned New York ease in all profane. enslaved his body to cocaine, denied his father's signature, damned his sister's overture. And a new geography greeted him. The Atlantic drifted from offshore to lick his wounds, to give him slim transfusion as he turned, changed, wore a new waistcoat of solicitor, antidote to his southern skin, ammunition for a young paladin. And the bars, the glitter, the light, discharging pain from his bygone anguish of young black boys scared of the night. Sequestered on this new bank, he surveyed the fish, sweet cargoes, crowded with scales, fevers with quick sails, full sails of flesh, searing the coastline of his acquiesce, and the days rummaging his eyes, and the nights flickering through a slit of narrow bars, hips, thighs, and his thoughts labeling him misfit as he prowled, pranced in the starlit city, coloring his days and nights with gluttony and praise and unreconciled rights. My brother coming north. The first time I met my brother at 17, he had a green suit on. It was a hip green. There's a hip green, and there's a very unhip green. He had on that unhip green, and I thought, the first thing I thought is that I gotta get him out of that green suit. He will return him loose in a place called New York City. And then there's the brother's voice, and then my father's voice. The day he traveled to my daughter's house, it was June. He cursed me with his morning nod of anger as he filtered his callous walk, skip, hot, feet slip shot from 125th Street bars, face curled with odd reflections. The skin of a father is accented in the sentence of the unaccented. And then my father talks about his life. I was a southern Negro man playing music, married to a high yellow woman, who loved my unheard face, who slept with me in Nordic beauty. I, prisoner since my birth to fear, I unfashioned, buried in an open grave of mornings unclapped with constant sight of masters fat in debt with my diminished light. And then he talks about my mother, this love, this first wife of mine died in childbirth, this face of complex lace exiled her breath into another design, and I died, became wanderlust, demanded recompense from friends for my heartbreak, cursed the land for this new heartache, put her away with a youthful pause, never called her name again, wrapped my heart in gauze, became Romeo bound, applauded women as I squeezed their syrup, drank their stencil face, danced between their legs, placed my swollen shank to the world, became man distilled, early 20th century black man fossil, fulfilled by women things, for closing on my life, mother, where do I go before I arrive? Then he talks about my brother's mother. She wasn't as beautiful as my first wife. This ruby-colored girl, insinuating her limb against my thigh, positioning her wild life, her non-virginal smell as virginal, her climb towards me with slow walking hills, made me limp, made me stumble, made my legs squint until I stopped, stepped inside her footprint. I did not want to leave you, son. This flame, this pecan-colored festival requested me, not my child, your sister. Your mother could not frame herself as her mother, and I absentee father, and I nightclub owner carefree, did not heed her blood, did not see my girl's eyes, shade buckled down with southern thighs. Now my 78 years urge me on your land. Now my predator legs pray broadcast no nightmares, no longer birdman of cornerstone comes. I come to collapse the past while bonfires burn up your orphan's mass. I sing a dirge of lost black southern manhood, this Harlem man begging pardon, secreting old. And that is my brother coming north. Not to be a brother to his sister or a son to his father, you know, but to be a disruptor, to be a hater. And he wreaked havoc on the family for a very long time. And then I just want to say at some point that my brother will come, as he did most weekends, to our house. And as my father said, and I put it in his voice, but my brother will leave my house one Sunday when he, as he entered the house as usual, and for years he cursed our father and I ignored him. And one day he entered the house one Friday night and I said, you're too old to be cursing our father right now. When you were 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30, I let you do it. You're 31. Stop it. He did the best he could. That's all he could do. Period. That's all our parents do. If we could just learn that, so much pain could be dissolved. And so, you know, he said, I will curse him at will. And in our foyer there in Germantown, he cursed him. I grabbed him and we fell to the floor. And I began to hum to him and chant to him, actually in Wolof. And the brother's voice, he would leave my house that Sunday after we talked as a family and asked his father's forgiveness. I would read just two stanzas there. Brother's voice. There is nothing I do not comprehend. I have become a collector of shouts. Hold my ears, Father. I have come to mend our hearts, raise a glass, celebrate, root out lyrical slaughters, become your only son devout. I have become a lover of sweet water. I worship stone. I will not betray you, Father. Father's voice. Steady your hand, O man. Do not trouble yourself with language. Stalk his womb. He is listening to your corpuscles, cradle the clap and thunder of a new sound. He has called your name and oak teeth are found. Can you hold me, son, as I rise from this winter? Can you hear me, son, as I cross over this river? And this goes on about the reconciliation of my father, you know, and son, and my brother's illness, and my brother's trip to our house, and my brother's final trip into the hospital, and his death. And one of the things that I saw when I flew in from Paris during that last week, my brother kept saying, there's someone in the room with me. You know, and I said he was hallucinating. And then I realized that the ancestors had moved in to begin to talk to him. And I began in the latter part, the fourth section, the ancestors talk to him and to the family as he gets ready to make transition. And he speaks in Wolof, since you know that African Americans were, their language was taken away from them during our enslavement. And so he begins to speak Wolof at the end to his ancestors who were waiting for him. So that was part of what I just wanted to read that, and because this was one of the days he celebrated as his birthday. And this was a book that I did. I lived long enough to write it, and he lived long enough until 96 to hear it. Since we're in a museum, a woman by the name of Wangechi Mutu, I don't know if you've seen her work, an amazing, amazing woman who does also work in museums and how she will put up exhibits. She put up an exhibit here in a place called Philadelphia, and they asked me to come in to observe it. And I came in for a week and made notes about the work that she did with black women and black children and how they lived and how they walked and how they were abused and how they survived. And I called this belly buttocks and straight spines. For Sister Wangechi Mutu, one, you enigmatic woman exploding from clouds and intestines, riverbanks, kneecaps, veins, and horizons, tongues embroidered with eyelashes. You burn in my throat. I walk your footsteps singing you are here, you are there. You will never go away. You kiss your own breast, sleepwalk your eyes, stretch out with moths, singing your legs too. I know you butterfly sweet. Your lips taste of the sea. The years dusty with herstory anticipate life. Your hands writhe with pain, collapse in new prayer. Touch this western stained glass where goats commit themselves to military blood. The bleaching hips surrounding your teeth, wrapped in laughter, blood laughter, brittle noise, seaweed souls whistling words, whose little pumpkin are you? Who is your sister? Where is your mama? Our phones bleed ashes in this travel dust bowl three. This is a blues sermon, I think, hanging from the sky, scratching at the night, where literary brains demystify deaths. Seen from the angle of your life, you turn at the waist in red and purple confetti. The day stitches up your python mouth. You stroll black beyond the stars, star-leaping black-skinned woman. Seen from the angle of the camera, you become the mugshot, mugging a century of incestuous nipples, sound, video, smell, riding death on its lens. Do not feed the animals. They will bite one day. Who speaks? Who has spoken this squat language? Where are the vowels and consonants and diphthongs? Do not feed the animals. They squat in herds and will bite one day. Four. Red-orange breasts, leaking medical hieroglyphics, bones for cell, immaculate bones for cell stage right, Ethiopian bodies leaking into the ground stage left, old clothes unburied, children's eyes undressed, men's pants unzipped, women slipping, standing still backstage, awaiting modernity, master monsters with back tongues, conducted infernos, is God calling your lens to pray on, what's in a name, a leg, a heart, a skull, an ancestral wind, your intellect teases us with zero tolerance for lies, what's in a kiss, a smell, a black woman in white chalk, a woman sleepwalking on corners. What is erotic about a false step? Yo me espero, I wait for my coming, I wait for my coming. Now, as your congregational knees kneel, now that your birth lasts a long pause, now that you sigh amid the pale gaze of thirst, is that God's tongue sliding down your throat? Five, you'll say, you'll say, I know. Where is this brown-skinned woman going with her military hair? A bright, hysterical flower, eating cake, smiling cake, regurgitating cake. You'll say, I know. Smell the jelly robe woman squatting in her skin, her bright face eating blue sorrow. Smell the doctorial urgency of her shudderings, female pain, profiling her hunger. Who scrubs today white while women fall down in crucifixions? Can you hear their bird spirits strumming gravities? Can you hear the saxophone bloodletting the ghost shout? Can you play this woman with your fingers? Can you hear her confetti feet dancing under positive rhythms? Now, hear this, harpsichord teeth, bach bread spiles, put vaginas in the pill box for a while, telegraphic buttocks in bathroom stalls, you are tattooed on our eyes against the tabloid walls, mouths anointed with peacock twigs, hey, here I am, come along, take your pick. Hey, listen. Woman of eye, socket bone. Love can wear you down to a spinal eye bone. Love can make you drink your own blood. Unless you got a catcher's mitt, don't go playing with love, blood. Six, silence, my share. Gaieté, mi amor. No consecrated birth wardens today. No quick silver blankets today. No surgical procedures today. Just Bantu music with an asterisk beat today. Just a night shudder under your arms today. Just a pistol whip skin today. Just a lost pulse beat today. Just a railroad train of butts today. Just a machete beat against the sky today. Just some cock standing at attention today. Listen, Sister Wangechi. You hear me, don't you? And you hear, don't you? How your collage just stands there, amputee delirium. Sister Wangechi, you hear me, don't you? You hear the sacred music, eavesdropping these gallery walls, praising your beauty and bones in this hallway of lost sermons. You hear me, don't you? You hear the children running, a furious circle of legs, jumping adolescent rhymes as they light up streets with garbage bags, balls, as they spill their magical spines, their genius, their surplus knees on streets. It is evening, and we have arrived in your arms of lost seconds. You hear me, don't you? Even as you navigate this halo of ordained voyages, as you uncork the daylight past these shadows, past our doors left open, and your gentle breath fills the day with sweet eyelids of silver, as you arrive at the ark of your name, Sister Wan Gichi Mutu. Sister Wan Gichi Mutu, you hear me, don't you? And I invoke your name, your gallery of female matadors, as they come and dance in thunder. Thank you.